no problem.
So tonight's topic, there are two packets going around. It's a little bit of an unusual structure because it'll be impossible to go through all of the sources or even a modicum sampling of the sources in the short time that we have, thank you, to tackle tonight's topic. Anything that I have to share was born out of the studies that I had several years ago, as I mentioned once previously, under the tutelage of Dr. Edward Reichman in a course that we had on infertility and halacha. Someone had asked me at some point for a bibliography, so for tonight I gave you three articles on the handwritten page. For those who would like further information about this topic, you can take a look. I didn't Xerox them, but they're available and I can email them to you if you'd like the full text. So I'm definitely dedicated to these, indebted to these articles and to many other sources, but primarily what got me interested in this was the course that I was privileged to participate in with Dr. Reichman at YU, and we spoke about a whole host of shilas and topics related to infertility and halacha. So the last time we last left our heroes, we spoke about ART, assisted reproductive technologies, and the mitzvah of Pru Revu. And we discussed some of the questions regarding whether or not the use of assisted reproductive technologies would constitute a fulfillment of Pru Revu or not. So it was a long discussion about Iber Bambati, about bathhouse insemination for those who were there at that time, etc. That was at the Cones, for those who were there. Tonight, I'm going to talk about, we'll discuss a specific topic, specifically related to gender selection. There is a, I gave you a reference to a tradition article that appeared in 2007. They did a symposium on gender selection, and in there is an article by Dr. Reichman where he discusses the history of gender selection. Apparently, it was thought of in years past that in many centuries ago, in ancient civilizations, that there were different ways to produce specifically male children or female children. They thought that the uterus had seven chambers. There was the right side and the left side. This is not in the words of Chazal, but historically, there were all kinds of efforts that were put forth to try to figure out how to ascertain, to produce the gender of the child that you were interested in. Now, this was actually practiced in certain cultures in different ways. In China, according to the research that I read, there used to be an imbalance of 106 to 100 boys to girls. And then over the course of time, with a heavy influence on an interest in boys, there is now, I don't know if it's today, but as of this research, the ratio is 130 to 100. So there's a significant rise in the population of men. And this could play out in different ways. So historically, different people tried different methods. Chazal also weighed in on this question in several different Gemaras. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra that describes that the Gemara says, if somebody wants, and again, it'll work in whatever direction a person is interested. This is not in the source pages that you have in front of you. There were lots of different sources that we'll reference. It's in Daf Yoram and Aleph. Someone wants Mayasa Adam v'yu banim zecharim. If he wants male children, so the first day of the Gemara is Yefazer Ma'os of Laniim. She gives tzedakah, and his prayers will be answered. His requests will be answered. Another option the Gemara says: Rabbi Yeshua Omer Yisamach Ishto L'dvar Mitzvah. Should make his wife happy for relations. This is not in the source packets. You won't find it. The source packets are only what I call the Kovetz Tshuva. It's just the bottom line. We'll get to it. There is a Gemara in Nida, which may be more known to some, that the Gemara in Nida discusses the pasuk Isha ki Sazria, v'yolda Zachar. So the Gemara has this idea that Isha Mazra'as Techila, if the woman gives off seed first, so then v'yolda Zachar. But if the Ish Mazria Techila, then it's v'yolda Nekeva. So they didn't necessarily know about sperm and eggs, and they didn't know about ovulation, but they were trying to figure out, trying to ascertain which aspect of conception comes from the woman and which aspect comes from the man. And there's an interesting discussion about how far off this is and the timing of conception vis-a-vis relations, which is an interesting discussion in the questions of infertility challenges for women who can't get back from the mikvah fast enough vis-a-vis to their ovulation, which took place too early. It's a whole other discussion. But it sounds like from the Gemara, they were trying to figure out ways to ascertain whether it would be a boy or a girl, so maybe you could even manipulate the system so that you could get a boy or a girl. So first of all, you see from Chazal that that's not a negative thing. There's nothing wrong, apparently. There's nothing ethically or morally wrong with pursuing one gender or another. And there were different ways, ideas that they thought about of how to do this.
Were the ideas like based on, like, you'll have, if you do these things, you'll have the merit of having boys, like Zechiah, or are they based on, like, their perception of biology?
Sounds like from the Gemara Nida that it was a biological perception.
But the other thing.
But the other Gemara.
The other one was supposed to. Right.
Just like with the, you know, it says with the Sota that,
yeah,
if it turns out that she didn't do anything, then she'll get pregnant and have a boy.
On a philosophical basis, not on a practical, but on a philosophical basis, there could be a problem if you're upsetting, like if you're successful in upsetting the balance between 50-50 time, you've got a problem.
You have a shidduch crisis potentially. So, not to make light of that difficult situation either. Okay, so there's another, all kinds of things. Today, these things are capable. These are practical. These are almost, in certain circumstances, guaranteed. And that's what we want to talk about. So, there are different ways of ascertaining whether or not a person will have, a couple will have a boy or a girl. So, one way is to test the fetus and decide what you're going to do if you find out the results. So that is a possibility, and that exists in the world. There are couples who will test an embryo, fetus, and decide, based on whether it's a male or a female child, whether they're going to keep that child. Such a possibility does exist. Now, how many people choose that is unknown to me, but that's not something that we're going to countenance, because the issue of abortion in Jewish law is a complex one. It's reserved for the most extreme circumstances. So if that's not a possibility, so then what what do we see as another option? So there is something called FCS, called flow cytometry separation. So apparently, and as you know, I'm not a big scientist. I don't know anything about medicine, so that's why we have the doctors here, to make sure that we're on the straight and narrow. Apparently, the Ribbono Shel Olam created us with DNA. So far, so good? Great. So we have cells. The cells have DNA. The DNA has all kinds of amino acids and different combinations of how to map what every creature is going to look like. So these things are made up of chromosomes, and different chromosomes have different implications. Well, apparently there's a chromosome for gender, and if you have two X chromosomes, you're a woman, a female, and if you have an X chromosome and a Y chromosome, so that means that you're a male. Well, apparently they can do a test whereby if they take a sperm and they wash it and they run it through like a lab test, the X chromosome and the Y chromosome will give off a different light, a different read, by spinning it around. And what they can do then is take, because remember, the female side, it's all X and X, so there's no point in, you know that what's coming from the female side is going to be the X. The question is the sperm a Y or an X? Well, if you test all the sperm cells and you pick only the X, well, then you know you're going to have a girl. If you have a Y, it's going to be a boy. It's one way to choose the gender of your future child. So now this, apparently, it was patented under a patent called Microsort. I believe that's what it was called. They say that the efficacy is somewhere in around the 80 to 90% range. But then there's another way of guaranteeing 100% accuracy, with human error taken into consideration, forgetting human error, 100% accuracy, and that's called PGD, which is known as pre-implantation genetic determination. PGD, pre-implantation genetic determination, which is the following. We spoke about the process of IVF. IVF, as we said, where you create fertilization in a lab between the sperm and the egg, and you're going to fertilize multiple embryos and implant a few embryos, and hopefully one of them will catch. That's the risk, by the way, of multiple births, because they're going to be implanting multiple embryos. So what do? You take your various, let's say you have four or five viable embryos, and you take a little cell out of each one. And because they're so early on, it doesn't hurt the embryo if you take one cell. You check that cell and find out what the chromosomes are.
It's a garbage.
Oh. Now, you have been able to determine your child with 100% certainty. So what's the halakhic status of this process? And you have many permutations of this question. You have a couple. They have four children. They're all girls. And they'd like to have a boy. You have a couple that has a known genetic disorder for which they are a carrier, or some kind of connection in their family. You have different scenarios by which couples may want to, perhaps under ordinary circumstances, they would conceive through natural means. Now they want to go to a lab and do IVF with PGD, so they can know exactly what the status of their child is. You know, maybe a couple wants a blue-eyed child. These are not just halachic questions. Now you're talking, you realize it's an ethical consideration as well, not just a strict, narrow halachic question.
Got it.
So these are the questions. Why would somebody do this? Maybe the most basic halachic observation would be the mitzvah of Pru Revu. We know that the mitzvah of Pru Revu is an unusual one. We alluded to it last time. The mitzvah of Pru Revu is not one like your average ordinary mitzvah. It's not one that you have in your control to fulfill. The mitzvah of Pru Revu is accomplished when a person has a boy and a girl. If they have a boy and a girl, they're mekayim the mitzvah of Pru Revu. Well, some people can... Some people can be mekayim that mitzvah. They have the blessing of getting married, they have the blessing of having children, and they have a boy and a girl. But many people don't have that blessing. They don't have the blessing of getting married much as they would like to, or they aren't blessed with children, Rahman al-Islam, much as they would like to, or they're blessed with children, just they're only they're going one side. All boys, all girls, you have such things. There are families. I know such families. So, what does that mean? So, just by the by, everybody should realize that's why the Gemara says in Shabbos, after 120 years, the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to ask us several questions. First of all, he's not going to ask us whether we were a Ravens fan or a Patriots fan or a Bears fan. He's not going to ask us that. He's going to ask us a Sakta Beperia Verivia. He's not going to ask you if you were a Mekayim Pru Revu. We can't control whether we're Mekayim Pru Revu or not. He's going to say, a Sakta, did you try? Did a person try to get married? Did they try to have children? Etc. Okay, so here's the couple. They have three girls. They come to the fertility clinic. They say they're totally healthy, but they would like to have a boy because they'd like to be mekayim the mitzvah of Pru Revu. Maybe you should ask the question the opposite. Maybe they're mechuyev. Maybe they're mechuyev to use ART, these artificial reproductive technologies, to ensure that they can be mekayim the mitzvah of Pru Revu. Is there such a chiyuv? In general, is there a chiyuv? Let's say a couple doesn't have children. Are they mechuyev to undergo assisted reproductive technologies? So Rav Shlomo Zalman, Zichrono Levracha, in a tshuva, in the Mincha Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's second in the Ma'adura Tinyan, in the second volume of tshuvas, he said a couple is not obligated. They're not obligated. Why not? So we could suggest several potential reasons why a couple is not obligated to undergo fertility treatments for the purpose of Pru Revu. Observation number one is there might be financial implications. So IVF, at least when I was studying this a couple of years ago, was running in the range of $10,000 to $18,000 for one round. That's not a guarantee. Many fail. Many succeed. Depending on the success, there are ways. You can go online, actually, and you can find out the success rate of a particular IVF clinic. As I mentioned last time, so I had the chance to visit two IVF clinics, one by the name of, under the direction of a very famous infertility doctor in New York. His name is Dr. Richard Grazi. It's in Brooklyn. He's in charge of infertility medicine in Maimonides. And also one in Westchester by Dr. Lehman. It's also a very prestigious infertility clinic. So for people who are unfortunately in need of these kind of services, there are measures and metrics to know which doctors are more successful. Just by the by, they also will tell you what their percentage is of multiples. So obviously, if they're implanting six eggs into a woman and they're four are going to take, many couples are not prepared to have quintuplets, quadruplets, triplets, or even sometimes even twins. You know, everybody's got to figure out what's right for them. So that's something to keep in mind in different circumstances. But anyway, so Rav Shlomo Salman says, you're not obligated. Some suggest it could be there's a cost limitation. We know that for a mitzvah, you're not obligated to be motzi hon rav, a huge sum of money. Well, how much is hon rav? How much you have to pay for an esrog? So it's a machlokas achronim. Some commentaries on Shulchan Aruch quote, you max out at a tenth. Some say it's chomesh, like a mitzvah of tzedakah, you can't give more than 20%. But if you're talking IVFs, you're talking a significant amount of money. Perhaps, we mentioned the last time, IVF ICSI, where there's like literally a needlepoint shidduch, that could run something to the tune of $70,000. So you're talking hon rav. So maybe that's one reason that you're not mechuyev. Number two, possibility number two, is we mentioned the last time we spoke that there was a big machlokas, a big tumult, if a person fulfills these various procedures and has children through IVF, are they really his children, Alpidin? Is even, are they considered to be misyaches, even their father, for purposes of peruvu? So we said that the majority opinion was that they were. This couple would be in fulfillment of peruvu. It would be b'no acharav. But we saw that there was a minority opinion, even as recent as Rav Ben Tzion Chai Uziel, the chief rabbi alongside Rav Kook, who said that there wasn't yichus, based on that suffix from the Beis Shmuel in the commentary on Yoredeya, the Beis Shmuel with the Taz, back and forth, the Chalkas Mechokek. So on that score, maybe you're not even Mekayim the Mitzvah of Puruvu. And the third suggestion that we should put out there is that it's not so clear that the Mitzvah of Puruvu even hinges on ART. As I mentioned before, the Mitzvah of Puruvu is an unusual Mitzvah. So if you ask the Minchas Chinuch, Rabbi Yosef Babad, in his classic commentary from Galicia, he says, you want to know what the Mitzvah of Puruvu is? The Mitzvah is to have a boy and a girl. That's the mitzvah. It's a totsah-oriented mitzvah like every other totsah-oriented mitzvah. Comes along Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva, he says that that's not correct. That's not the Maisa Mitzvah Peruvu. He says it can't be. He quotes a Tosas in Bava Basra, which we're not going to get into the Arichas, but we alluded to it last time, discussing the concept of ase docha los ase in the case of a union of a forbidden couple. Well, at what point can you say that there is a conflict? Let's say there's a mitzvah of Yibum, or there is a mitzvah puruvu for them to be together, but there is an isser, let's say she's a grusha and he's a kohen. So Tosfos has a discussion there in Bava Basra whether the isser or the mitzvah are chal b'tchilas bia, at the beginning of the intercourse, or b'sof bia. Says Rav Moshe, if the mitzvah puruvu has to do with the totsah when the child is born, how can you talk about esse dochalo sese at a maisa bia? What are you talking about? There's no mitzvah here. Says Rav Moshe, the Minchas Chinuch is incorrect. The mitzvah of Puruvu is the mitzvah of Bia. The act of intercourse itself, that's the Maisa mitzvah. That's the mitzvah. Now, whether or not a person merits to have a boy and a girl, that's Ribono Shel'olam's cheshbon. That might be the Kiyama mitzvah. That might be the threshold after which they don't have to try any longer. Some might say the same thing as a weak analogy, but just to make sure nobody's sleeping. Some people could say this about Ad Lo Yada. What's the mitzvah of Ad Lo Yada in Purim? So it depends who you ask. If you ask me to have a little extra bar tenura, I'm yotzi my mitzvah of Ad Lo Yada. Other people, they have a different opinion about Ad Lo Yada. So let's say there's a mitzvah to continuously drink until they hit Ad Lo Yada. Then there's no mitzvah to keep drinking. So that's what Moshe would say. There's a mitzvah to keep trying until you hit that threshold, but that's not the Ikar mitzvah. So if you ask Rav Moshe, is there a chiyuv to undergo IVF? Would that constitute puruvu? Rav Moshe would tell you no. Yes, at the end of the day, you will have accomplished puruvu, But that's not a maisa mitzvah pruvu that you can say I'm mechuyev to do that. So for all these reasons, we assume a person is not mechuyev to undergo IVF. The question is it appropriate? Is it permissible to undergo IVF with PGD to choose the gender of the child? So, well, in many cases, in all these circumstances, is it permitted to undergo IVF for PGD? Well, this gets back to the question of what are the concerns, what are the issues involved with doing IVF? So you would think that IVF is an incredibly advanced technology to help us have children. It's certainly a great thing. So on the one hand, it is. On the other hand, it's not so simple. Because we mentioned the last time that the concept of artificial insemination is not new. It's already existed at the end of the 18th century. They were successful in artificial insemination, initially with fish and then with people. So by the 19th century, there's artificial insemination all over the place. The Shaila comes to the Rabbonim, what's the status of artificial insemination? Can we permit it? Aliba de Hilchasa. So, what's the problem? What's the issue? So the issue is not so much the act of insemination, although there are poskim who are concerned about that, the fact that the doctor is inseminating the woman. By the way, just one tidbit of current events. I don't know if people, if we're listening to the news, last week there was a case in Kansas. Again, this stuff interests me, so I pay attention to it. There was a case in Kansas last week of a couple, happened to be a couple, they were two women. For whatever reason, these two women were living together for a specific reason. They're not living together now, but they were at the time, and they wanted to have a child. So they found a sperm donor, a chavez, they found him online, and he signed off saying, I'm not going to be the father. Shine, he signs off, he's not responsible for them. Kum tochais, what happens? The couple, the two women separate. The woman who has the baby is now poor, so she applies to the state for aid. The state says, where's the father? She says, no father. Artificial insemination. They say, wait a second. Was it done by a physician? They said, no. Okay, then by the state of Kansas law, you're the father. And that's how they ruled.
Now they're suing the father. And he has to pay.
Exactly, because the state's going after him for money. Okay.
It's a big thing for my wife and her.
In the law. Yeah.
It's a big deal.
So these cases, mamish ara yom hazeh. So here's the question I'll pit in. What do we say about these cases? Comes the tshuva to the Maharsham, Reb Shlom Morchev Shvadron, from Brezhan, from Galicia. The Maharsham gets this shaila. A couple live together for 10 years. And they have no children. The doctor says there's an issue with conception, but they'll do IUI, which we spoke about, we mentioned last time. IVF is where they do the shidduch in the lab. IUI is, to use the medical terminology, they spritz it right directly into the uterus, and then that's no problem. That's the first stage. That's what they. If I went to medical school, that's what they would have said. So they take a syringe, a tiny little opening, it's not a problem with psichus akever, we'll work it all out, it's no problem. They'll insert the zera right into, the sperm will go right into the uterus, and hopefully it'll take. So this shaila came to the Maharsham and to other poskim, including Rav Ovadia Hadaya, the Baal Yaskil Avdi. Great poskim, the Maharsham and the Yaskil Avdi and many other poskim. So the shaila comes to the Yaskil Avdi and says, I have a question for you. How are you going to procure the sperm? This is the problem. Where are you going to get sperm? So part of testing for infertility is often going to be examining the sperm because they have to check for female factor infertility, which is 50% of the cases. Male factor infertility, that's about 30% of the cases. And then Rachamana Litzlan, unexplained infertility, that's about 20% of the cases. So they're doing the workup on the man. They're going to try to figure out what's the problem. So they have to go through a whole battery of things. Then they have to check the semen, figure out the sperm, what the count is and the morphology of it and the mobility of it and all the different kinds of things. So where are they going to get the sperm? So one option is what's called a PCT, a postcoital test. So after the couple is together, so then they'll harvest the semen and they'll bring it in for a test. So that has challenges in and of itself, where it's done and how long the sperm is viable. And that's one option, that's one issue. But then, very often that sperm is not going to be good enough. Even if they'll do a sperm wash, it's not going to be good enough for insemination. So you have to get a sperm sample. So that's a problem. Because the Shulchan Aruch writes in Evan Ezer, we know it's on the books, that there is an Isser called Hotsoa Zera Levatala, wasting seed. Hotsoa Zera Levatala, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's from the Achaveras HaChamura Sheba Torah, one of the most severe Averas in the Torah. And now, Rav Moshe points out in the Tshuva, it doesn't mean that it's more severe than murder. Obviously, from one perspective, murder and other averas are very severe, but this is also a serious avera. There is a Kabbalistic influence here probably happening in the Shulchan Aruch as well, because this is the shorish of all life, the source of all life. So here we have a potential Isser, which we will assume is an Isser Daraisa according to most poskim. Maybe it's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, maybe it's learned from the story of Er and Onan. That's why it's called Onanism. Why? Because the Pasuk says that Onan didn't want to live with Tamar because he didn't want to give the name of the child after his brother. Levilti Shiches Arza, so he'd rather what's called Zorim Bifnim, Dosh Bifnim, Zorim Bachutz. So it's wasting seeds. That's probably an Isdoraisi, yeah.
Aren't there those, I mean, since the Erba Onan story is pre Matan Torah, I know the post could look for. Or the Rishonim, I think, look for the source of the Isser.
So that's why I pointed out.
Some would say it's Lav Miklal Asir Puravu.
So there are a whole host. There is one minority opinion that says it's an Isser Rabbanon. So Rav Moshe is very sharp on that opinion. But there is a range of opinions. The predominant view is that it's an Isser Daraisa. So here you have.
I'm saying if the Isser is because of the Lav Miklal Asir Puravu, then maybe there's a lot of room to be lenient in that regard. Could be.
So here's the problem. We have a problem. How are you going to get the sperm? And this is the issue. So the Baal Yaskil Avdi says, wait a second, you're going to get the sperm, especially he's talking the 19th century. He says, who's to say that the sperm is going to be used? Because in the old days, I remember Dr. Reichman pointed out some cases like this, that if you were an infertility doctor, a doctor working in the late 19th century, and you wanted to make sure that your customers were happy, so you have a nice African-American couple that comes to you, and you see in the lab that the sperm from this guy is not going anywhere. So you know what you'll do? Sperm booster. You'll be Baal Chesed. You'll give him some of your own sperm as the doctor. And then, wow, look at that child. So interesting that he doesn't look like the parents at all. So this was going on, especially in an unregulated environment. This was going on. Maisim shahayu kachayu. So that they were the rabbanim were concerned. Who knows? Maybe they're going to use the sperm. Maybe they're not going to use the sperm. And even if they do use the sperm, not all of it is going to be used. Some of it is going to be washed, and some of it is going to be thrown in the garbage. So here we have this problem of otzah zera levatola. Therefore, says the Baal Yaskil Avdi, it's not permitted. IVF and IUI and all of these practices that involve sperm retrieval is not permitted. Now, maybe we could do something else. We could aspirate the sperm with a needle. Well, that's a whole other story, because that's very invasive, number one. Number two, you get involved in other halachic shilas. In fact, sperm fine needle aspiration does not create a krus shavchev. Unfortunately, somebody has a difficulty. They can't even get the sperm in the normal fashion, so they have to aspirate it. One would run into the problem, maybe the person would become a krus shavchev, like a ptua daka. They couldn't remain married. So the Chazon Ish points out, many other poskim point out, that's not a problem, because the incision is so tiny that it heals itself, so it doesn't become a ptua daka, someone who had been castrated. Not technically castrated, but halachically. Anyway, that's why I told you I couldn't bring any sources, but this is a whole part of the discussion. Says the Yaskil Avdi, there's no heter for IUI. There's no heter for artificial insemination. The Marsham, he says, he thinks that because it's a tzorach gadol, bedochach, he's willing to be matrit. He writes at the end of the tshuva in the Marsham, as long as two other Rabbanim Mupakim will agree to this heter. Why, he says? Because perhaps it's not going to be called, Rav Asher alluded to this, maybe it's not called Otsoa Zera Levatola if you're taking the Zera for the purpose of re-implanting it. Oh, because it basically comes back to the same Hakira that we alluded to last time. So many areas of Jewish law come back to this. You know, it's a conceptual question. Is this a table that's set? Or is it a cup that's surrounded by a lot of things? When you take that sperm, so now, are you doing an act of otzoa zera batola because you look at it in a micro sense, or do you look at it in the macro and say, no, it's for the purpose of hazra afterwards? So we pointed out that Rav Shlomo Zalman and other poskim, the plurality of poskim today, assume that it's mutter to do IVF and IUI. There is a problem. How exactly are you going to get the sperm? Because Rav Moshe is very strong about this. There's a Gemara in Nidan, Daf Yud Gimel, that says there's an Isser of what's called Niyuf Biyad Uberegel. Adultery by hand and by foot. So what does that mean, adultery by hand and by foot? The Gemara assumes that that is what we would call classically masturbation. So Moshe says that what the Gemara is trying to tell you is that's some shmek of adultery, some semblance of a cardinal avera. And therefore, Moshe says you can aspirate the sperm. You can have the husband emit the sperm, but it's got to be in an indirect way. And he has a great raya for this. The Gemara in Yevamos has a question. What about if you have a guy, unfortunately, he has a pagam in his aver. There's a little hole, and for some reason, the sperm is dripping out of this hole. Mm-hmm. So Shaila is this person a krus shafra? Is he a ptsu adaka? Is he permitted to get married? Is he not permitted to get married? What kind of injury is this? Then the Gemara describes that it healed. Now it's closed up. The aperture is closed up. So what do you say? Is that chozel abriyaso now? I'm sure you have, there's all kinds of terminology for this. I remember we talked about it. Is it chozel abriyaso, so it's mutter lova bakal? Or do you say no? Alpidini's asus. The Gemara says, we'll do a test. If he were to be nikre, if he were to emit semen, and the scab holds, then it's mutter. He's healed. But if it tears, so then it's usser, because you see the deformity is still there. So Gemara says, okay, smart aleck, good idea. How are you going to find out? How are you going to do the test? So Sarah Lavatola. So Gemara says, I'll tell you how you're going to do the test. You're going to take warm barley bread and put it at the person's rear end, and that would cause them to be motzi zera. Now, by the way, unfortunately, you laugh, but I will say, now we're going to get very unfortunate and very morbid very fast. It's not a secret that in the Holocaust, when the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichron, were doing medical experiments, so they were doing medical experiments on women, and they were also doing medical experiments on men. And there were many experiments that involved forced emissions, which Rahman al-Islam. So what the Gemara is trying to tell you is that there are other methods of causing. So the Gemara says, how could that be? Not everybody, that's not going to affect everyone. So the Gemara says, you know what? Something else. We're going to put in front of him, this is Gemara in Yevamos Daf Ayin Vav, we're going to put colored women's clothes in front of him, and that will cause a seminal emission. So this brings me back to a famous story from the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav said to the Chassidim in Williamsburg in the 1950s, he said, one bus ride into Manhattan is more exposure for us than a lifetime living in the shtetl. So in today's day and age, women's clothing, colored women's clothing, is not necessarily going to do the trick. So this is a very complicated story, how exactly to procure the sperm. And this is a big issue. So Rav Moshe is opposed to Niyaf Biyad of a regel. The Tshuvas Baal Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Woldenberg, Zichron Levracha, he said, B'docha Gadol would be mutter even Biyad of a regel. He has a discussion about mechanically versus using the hand, all kinds of different ways. But the bottom line is, to make a very, very, very long story short, it's possible, according to halacha, to allow IVF. We had a doctor, his name was Dr. Nachum Katlowitz, who is the head of male fertility at Staten Island University Hospital, and in Maimonides. So I remember he came and he spoke to us, he's a urologist by trade, and he spoke to us all about these different diseases and different factors that could potentially ruin the zera, and how they have to do different kinds of tests and all kinds of tests. If anybody's interested, Dr. Grazi edited a book that's about this thick called Overcoming Infertility. If somebody's interested, they have Dr. Katlowitz has an article in that book about halacha and infertility. So here we are now. So shaila number one is, are we going to allow the heterim of IVF and IUI, artificial insemination, for the purpose of PGD? For just choosing your child, yeah.
I remember, you know, at Einstein, the reproductive force, they had a lot of experience also. And one of the solutions that they had mentioned, obviously this was not, you know, this is just from, I guess, solutions that some of their religious patients had, or they had discovered through some of their religious patients, was, I think, through the use of a condom, and maybe like a, I think, a pinhole in the condom as a
interesting.
Yes. So Dr. Kalowitz reminded me of that. He mentioned that in a lecture. That is also quoted by the Nishmas Avram, Dr. Abraham's encyclopedia, the Nishmas Avram. So he mentions that some poskim prefer that. Rav Moshe writes in Tshuva. Can I just one more story? Because this is just teaching the greatness of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe writes, Rav Moshe was, he felt that a condom was against halacha, mm-hmm. but in one of the tshuvas about infertility and sperm procurement, he writes, even though I am opposed to this practice, you should know that Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, the author of the Achiezer, he says that it's mutar. So you just see the greatness of Reb Moshe, that he thought that it was an Isser Doraisa to use the condom. Mm-hmm. He thought it wasn't Kedera Kolaris, but the Baal Tshuva Achiezer, who was alive in Vilna, died in 1941, he thought there was mutar. So Reb Moshe was great enough to say, my position is this way, you should just know there is another position. He writes that in the Tshuva. So Dr. Abraham quotes that some say you should use a condom. However, I just remember from the course that he said you can't use a regular condom because they have spermicides in them. They have to use a special thing. I think it was called Milex. Sounds right. Some kind of plastic that doesn't damage the sperm. And then there are further poskim who suggest maybe if you put a little hole in it, even if it's just at the back, maybe that's not called Hotzah Zera Levatola because it has the potential to be Masriya. So that's, yes, that is, Dr. Abraham mentions that. In the Tshuvas, in the Nishmas Avram, he quotes from the Tshuvas Baal Tzitz Eliezer, and he has like a step of sequence. What's most preferred, what's least preferred. I'm just giving you Bekitzer Nimrats, but we could spend many weeks just on male factor infertility. Bekitzer, so that's option number one. One thing to think about is the Shilas that are involved in IVF in the beginning. Shila number two. You have a couple that can conceive normally. So in the end of that packet, in the end of the RCA tradition, they quote from Dina Zimmerman. I think she's a prominent physician, and she also writes a lot about Taras and Mishpacha. She says, wait a second. We have to think about the risks. There are health risks involved in IVF. So I'll give you the statistics that she says. Now, remember, these statistics are not like huge to begin with, in terms of the normal population of risks, but you're adding significant risks. Number one, there are risks to the child, to the baby. Higher risks of spontaneous, what she calls adverse perinatal outcomes, including perinatal mortality, preterm delivery, and low birth rate, partly due to the increased risk of multifetal pregnancy, but even singleton pregnancies achieved by ART are also at a higher risk. So it's a risk to the baby. Not only that, it's a risk to the mother. So she quotes several studies here of, they did studies in the women, pregnant women in Sweden. In the study of all pregnancies in Sweden, women who underwent IVF had an increased risk of ovarian torsion during pregnancy. They were more likely to encounter preeclampsia. I don't know what that is.
It's like high blood pressure.
High blood pressure. 63% increased risk. Placental abruption over twice the risk, and placenta previa over three times the risk, all of which pose a health risk to the mother. So here you have, yes, the couple has three girls, they'd like to have a boy. But what about the risks? Furthermore,
some of those risks are actually
very serious risks.
They're very low percentages, right, but they're actually very significant. There's also something called ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which is congestive heart failure.
So these are
fatal,
right?
So a very, very low percent chance of it happening. But
once you're increasing the risk, what's the benefit? What's the risk? Ethical considerations. You know, we're talking perhaps if you go extreme, you're bordering on eugenics. You know, I'm going to peel out. I want a child with blonde hair, blue eyes. I only want tall, etc., etc. You know, where does it end? What is it going to be now, depending on cost? Is it going to be that the wealthy people, they can have healthy children, they can have the best-looking children, and the poor people, so they can't have healthy children? Is it going to be that someday down the road, before you go on a date, they're going to ask you, wait a second, can I see your genetic map? And I want PGD on every child.
We already do that.
You know,
from where else?
So at what point? At what point do we say that? And finally, one other interesting thing that's brought up in the Tshuvas has to do with halachic, halachic considerations aside. At some point, we said at the beginning, yes, the Gemara relates to the issue of choosing a gender in terms of preference. At one point do we say, you know, it's beyond human involvement. We should say, leave it to the Rabbona Shalom. Don't get involved in certain secrets of the universe. Good question. This does appear in Tshuva's back and forth. So these are all ethical considerations. So let me give you four scenarios, and then we can see the Tshuva's. Scenario number one, we need to think about families that are carriers for certain diseases. So to do IVF PGDs, to make sure that the child shouldn't, Rahman al-Islam, be affected with a serious illness. Shaila number two, let's say you have a couple that can't have children. So, they're going to, let's say they have an adopted child, or something like that. Well, adopting children is a very complicated story. That's why some people in the Jewish community don't have the practice of adopting children, because, and it's a very, very sensitive issue, but there is a halakhic question regarding kirva to the opposite gender, i.e., if a couple adopts a girl, so there's a shaila, is there an iser yichud of the girl with the adoptive father? Is there an iser negia of the girl with the adoptive father? So let's say you have a circumstance where if you genetically, let's say you have a couple somehow that the mother and the father, if you can genetically engineer the one child that's going to be born to be born to the right gender, quote unquote, so that there won't be an issue here, that will save potentially their family. Question number three. Let's say you have a couple. The father's a Kohen, the mother's, doesn't matter what she is. They're going to have a child. They have no children. They can't have children. So they're going to get sperm from a sperm bank. This is a whole other shiloh. How are they going to get sperm from a sperm bank? A goy, a Jew, whatever it's going to be. They're going to have a child. The father's a Kohen. Comes the kid's bar mitzvah. They're going to say, Yamod. Ploni the Yisrael. Ben Almoni the Kohen. They're going to give him Shlishi. What kind of a bizoyan would happen to this family? The kid is not a Kohen. The father, the paternity, will follow the sperm donor. So the father could be a goy. He has no yichus. So he's Yisrael. What's that?
You could have a Kohen.
Potentially.
You can have a subject's Kohen and they're not.
So what do you do? So if this couple has a girl, so then they obviate tremendous stress in their family in terms of questions.
Although down the road there might be a question.
There's going to be questions. There's going to be questions of yichus either way.
Yeah.
But
I know that.
And finally, the last question is in terms of balance in the family. So these are all the factors that we're going to have to figure out if we were poskim. So in the two packets that you have, in the very few minutes remaining, the research part is in the packet that has the handwritten front, and that's a piece from Machon Pua. What's that? The sickness, yichud potential issues, the Kohen potential, and then the family balance. You know, you want to choose the child. So the first packet with the handwritten is the summary from Machon Pua, who was the Israel side, the sponsor, Jewish infertility specialist, great tzaddikim and gedolim, Rav Menachem Bernstein. The reason why this is popular is because 2 weeks ago, Machon Pua had their annual conference, whereby afterwards it was reported in the Jewish Week in New York that Rav Bernstein spoke afterwards about the permissibility of PGD for choosing a child, choosing the gender. So that's the background in that packet. The tshuvas come in the other packet. That's the, you see, I called it COVID tshuvas b'inyan PGD. So you open to the first page. This is from the Nishmas Avram, Dr. Abraham, in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, and I'll just summarize it outside, says Rav Shlomo Zalman to Dr. Abraham, I'm supportive, I think that it's mutter to undergo IVF for the purpose of peruvu. Or even if the couple has children, they would like more children. Sheves, the mitzvah of having more children. But not for the purpose of choosing the gender of a child. Shlomo Zalman said that's not enough to be matur the potential isurim. However, he says in the third column, nonetheless, Rav Shlomo Zalman told him personally, Dr. Abraham says, they know bezug she yadua she yaldeim azachorim alulu lizbol mimachala kosha kagon hemophilia. They know that all their male children are at risk of hemophilia, which I didn't realize that was the case, that a particular gender is at a risk of a particular disease.
Certain diseases. Hemophilia is one of them.
Oh, so
blindness is another one.
Okay. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, in that case, mutar levatzea avuram hazara malachutit. It's permitted to undergo IVF and then PGD to figure out what the child is going to be so that you can avoid, Rachmana Litzlan, having this child that will have this risk. Similarly, if you look on the next page, this I got from Rabbi Brander. This is the letter, yeah.
Would that extend to preventing carriers of it, or only directly?
It's a good shiloh. Good shiloh. It doesn't say. I can surmise, but I can't say with certainty. Right. This letter.
I guess, why not?
stama would be mutter, because the suffix, suffix sakana is also a sakana.
No,
there's
no disease.
Oh,
carrier, that, asymptomatic carrier.
So that woman who's, that girl who's born could have, all her boys would have hemophilia.
Right.
If she's a carrier.
I don't understand. So, oh, got it.
It's carried on the X.
Let's say mother's a carrier. Mother's a carrier, so
50% of her boys.
50% of the boys would have it.
And all the girls, 50% of the girls would be carriers.
50% of the girls would be a carrier. So would be, there would be a way, if you had something where you would only have, you know,
you could just get rid of the gene altogether.
Carrier.
So I'll quote you the Chazon Ish. There is a Chazon Ish. Well, I'm not so sure. I'll quote the Chazon Ish. There's a Chazon Ish who talks about the issues of danger. You know, I'm not a big skier. I don't ski. I skied once or twice. It was a bad experience. I'm not so coordinated to go skiing. I don't go skiing. Skiing for me is a begeder. It's car of Lusafik Sakana. Because there are trees, there are people. It's not. That's definitely not a good idea. It's a suffix sakana for them. It's more of a sakana for me. But what about skiing? Is skiing a dangerous thing to do? What about driving? Rav Kook actually was asked in the turn of the century, is it mutter to drive because it's a suffix pikuach nefesh? Remember, he was driving. He lived in Yafo. He lived in Yerushalayim. So it was a little bit of a different driving experience. A little bit of a different driving experience than maybe in Chicago. Anyway, so Chazon Ish has the following observation. He says, if you have a real suffix sakana, you say someone's going to go on this sea voyage, there's a 20% chance they're going to die, so obviously it's aser. It's a pikuach nefesh, it's a mishmarat ma'odanav shasechem. If, Rav Shechter likes to quote this Chazon Ish, if you have a suffix like the Chasam Sofer says, echad me'elef alfei alofim, one in a zillion, like driving, you know, it's one in a zillion, and everybody is not worried about it, it's not a problem. What if you have a small sakana? A little sakana, 1% sakana. So then the Chazon Ish says, depends on how you feel about it. If you're nervous about it, then you should be worried about it as a sakana. If you're not nervous about it, you don't have to worry about it as a sakana. There's a subjective element to danger. I'm getting close to time, so I can't speak too much more about this. But I think to Dr. Nagar's point, or Jeff, I think this plays the role. If somebody's worried about the potential of being a carrier, so then, according to the Chazon Ish, they're begeder suffix sakana. It's a begeder, a suffix medical issue. If they say, we don't care, so then they don't care. You're looking on the next page, at this is like the original letter that Rav Menachem Bernstein, who's the head of Machon Pua, wrote to the Rabbonim, the great Rabbonim, years ago, Tavshin Samach Gimel in Eretz Yisrael, regarding the issue of genetic selection for gender. So he gives you three options, and we're going to see the tshuvas, literally the tshuvas. Option number one is a special diet, which he says in those days worked about 60% of the time, based on dieting and timing of ovulation. There's a whole Torah about this. There are lots of books about this, timing of ovulation, and that's why there are certain phenomena in the Jewish community about women who have certain cycles that fit with their mikvah, so it could be that that's why that they're predisposed to have girls or boys based on the timing of their cycle, based on the mikvah situation, because ovulation and conception are somewhat related. That's option number one. Is that mutter, to time ovulation? Number two, taking the seeds. That's what we referred to before as the FCS, the flow cytometry separation. That was shita number two. And then shita number three is IVF with the PGD, pre-implantation genetic determination. These are the shilas. You see how he writes in Gimel, 100% hatzlacha, guaranteed, it's PGD. You could see what. So he sent these shilas to the great Rabbanim. Turn the page, you see the handwritten response of the great Gon. I saw him last week with my own eyes. I had a chance to speak to him. I was in Israel, Baruch Hashem, for 2 days. The great Gon, Marna Rav Avigdor Nevensal. What does Rav Nevensal write back to Rav Bernstein? He writes here, this is his handwriting, La'anias daiti haderach harishona hi hamuvcheres, ki ein ba mishum hashchesa zera kol ikar. The first way is the best way, dieting and the ovulation testing. By the way, dieting, ovulation testing also has interesting halachic shailas, because depending on whether she's doing a sonogram to detect whether she is ovulating, or she's checking with these either a BBT, a basal temperature thermometer, or an ovulation kit, what happens on Shabbos? Because she has to check every day. So there's a big shaila. Shlomo Zalman talks about this, Bekitzer. However, notice what Rav Nevensal writes in the last line here. Haderech hashniya adifa al hashlishis. The second way, FCS is better than PGD. Notice he does not say that PGD is usher. He just says it's not as recommended. Look to the next tshuva from Rav Amar, the chief rabbi, the Sephardic chief rabbi. Obviously, number one, diet is totally mutter. Number two, shar hashitos ma'olu pashut. I'm on the bottom of the page here, he writes. He quotes the Rabban and the Chinuch Legabi Kilayim. And you have to be careful about getting involved in Maisa Bereishis. We have these kind of shilas. You have to ask each one. I identified specifically. He says, Litzorech tichnun mishpacha. Last line there. For the purpose of family planning, ein lahatir. It's not mutter to choose the gender, just for family planning. Next tshuva.
You have to have a good reason.
You have to have a very good reason. He sent this tshuva, by the way, I didn't put it in the Xerox. He sent this tshuva to Rav Neuwirth, the author of the Shmira Shabbos Kilchasa. And Rav Neuwirth sends him back a really sharp reply. He says to Tsarli sha'atem misaskim b'inyonim shenistarim me'itanu. It's not in the packet. Some of the tshuvas that were like this one. This is from Rav Yaakov Ariel. It was hard for me to make out the words. So I didn't Xerox it. But Rav Neuwirth says, your whole point is to help people who need help with infertility and not in these areas. I don't get involved.
Who is he talking to?
To Rav Burstein, the head of Machon Pua. I was asking him this Shaila. Because what happens to Machon Pua, the couples come to him and they want to know, is it mutter, is it not? They are the advisors, the halachic advisors. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, the great Gaon, the Rav in Bnei Brak, he was asked by Dr. Grazi. Dr. Grazi wrote him a letter. That's on the next page. It's published in Asia, which is the preeminent medical halacha journal. Is it mutter to do this process? You see how it's signed on the bottom? Look how he signs the page. Professor?
Richard.
Yeah, I don't know how he got Richard. Reish Yud, Tzadi, Shmichik, Aleph, Reish Dalet. Chaim Grazi. Merkaz Refui Rambam, it's called?
Maimonides,
Borough Park, New York. So Dr. Grazi is...
That's awesome.
Right? That's how he writes. And Dr. Grazi sends the Shiloh to Bnei Brak. And what is the answer? So if you take a look on the next page, he says, number one, I'm not even sure that the child is going to be your child. Remember, we have all these Shilohs about Yichus. Number two, there's a problem of Pirtzas Geder of Tznius. So at the end of the day, if it's for the purpose of Das Tori wants to know what I think, I would say this is not necessarily the appropriate way to do it. However, he says, it's difficult to asser it, kosher lesser, if there's a genetic disease involved. So we have some extreme machmirim, we have the middle ground, and then we have one further shita. What is going to be, before we close with this last shita, what is going to be on the positive side of things, even if you talk about family planning? And this is where the tshuvas come from the Machon Pua. So you have a father, he comes to the Machon, and they identify he is in a clinical depression. And they say that part of the clinical depression, or he's the identification of the clinical depression, is his five girls, he has no sons. Now, Rabbi Freundel writes in one of the RCA articles, somebody comes to you with clinical depression because they have only girls, there's probably more than just that that's going on. You have to deal with that.
So something but, like that would make them clinically so depressed?
Oh.
Should they be having more children?
Good. Also a Shaila.
Either way.
So Maisa Shahaya Kachaya, that they did do the IVF with the PGD. They had a son. He went through therapy. It's part of that. He's better. He's fully functioning. Maisa Shahaya Kachaya. And the point is that, and this is what Rav Burstein, I assume, is talking about. I wasn't at the 2 weeks ago, the conference in Yerushalayim. But that is that today, psychological impact on halacha is different than it was in yesteryear. People's lives and their emotional makeup is extremely complex and in many cases very tenuous. And what one person sees as trivial, another person sees as a heartbreak. And therefore, Poskim, when they look at these shilas, have to look at them extremely carefully. And what is a serious consideration in one circumstance may not be in a different, and what's not in one case will be in another case. So every shila is going to be different. So that's perhaps why, if you go through this cheshbon, if you look at the next and final tshuva here, this is from the Marei Bazak, the tshuvas that are published, I'm sorry, I'm way over time now. The tshuvas that are published from Eretz Chemdon Yerushalayim was under the auspices of Rav Shlomo Yisraeli, now under Rav Yosef Carmel, who was here a couple of weeks ago for the Kolol. Every year he's come, given this year. This shaila was from Montreal, Canada, Teves Tovshin Samach Aleph. The couple is in Montreal. They send the shaila by fax to Yerushalayim. They have four daughters. They don't want any more girls, they want a son. What's the din? So what's the tshuva? So first of all, they say, Aleph, most poskim say if you have no children for infertility, it's mutter to do IVF. Number one. Number two, Bayes, if you're trying to head off a genetic disease like an X-linked gene that's problematic, it's mutter. What about number three? Gimel. B'mikrim acherim ein lahatr kfiyas hamin b'drachim einu. It's not recommended. V'ulam. If they're looking at specific children, why? They already have many children of one kind. She's advanced in her fertility age. She's not going to have any more children. I'll give you a case. They had a person who was a Holocaust survivor who died, and then they had no more children. It was mamish desperate for this family to name the child after the Holocaust survivor who had died. So can you do IVF with PGD so you can have a son to name after this man who was killed in the Holocaust? Nechleku aposkim. Yesha osru matilim savik betoelas. Like Rav Zilberstein, who said it's usher. V'af choshimo b'mechinas refuyos rabos. Top of left column. V'yeshe itiru. There are some who allowed it. B'mikrim d'chukim me'od. If you look in the footnote, he quotes Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, the great Sephardi posig, who said a couple that had five sons, they wanted to have a daughter. He said it was mutter in that case. So here you see a span of opinions, and every case is going to be different, but to understand the complexity of these shilas and the sensitivity of the cases that come before the Rabbanim and how they weigh the different factors, this is a very cutting-edge issue. It's going on literally just 2 weeks ago. They had this case. I hope that this enabled us to get a perspective on some of the developments in this interesting shila. All right?